Gray Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Gray Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. It is Friday, July 23rd, 2004, at 10:04 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name's Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on Geek Speak, we're doing a spot of geek news and then welcoming owner and operator of Cafe Bene to geek out about coffee and free high-speed internet access. During the second half of the show, I welcome you to join our conversation. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. I'll be giving out those phone numbers again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks John Tracy, owner and operator of FeltonGames.com, and Miles Elam, programmer and student of American literature. You know, it's so ungeeky to talk about American literature every week. Why don't you change your major to, like, computer science or something?
Oh, fine. I'll go back and get a real job.
All right. There you go. And then I get to read you as having a job? That's exciting. Before we go into the technical details of coffee and internet cafes, what's up in the world of technology, Miles? I'll start with you, sir.
I've been noticing a bunch of Citibank emails or pieces of spam, to really split hairs, a bunch of fraud coming through in my inbox.
Are you a Citibank customer?
No, I'm not. And that's one of the easiest ways to avoid getting scammed by Citibank is the fact going, wait a second, I don't have a Citibank account.
Not scammed by Citibank. Of course, it's not Citibank involved
right.
at all.
They're
it's
just
someone, using a name.
Right. It's someone pretending to be Citibank, including a few emails that take the graphics from the Citibank website and put it into the email to make it look more official. Or we'll take a Citibank email, for example, and then just make it look like theirs.
And it's the same thing that John's been talking about with PayPal. He gets a lot of PayPal fraud and eBay fraud.
Right. The official term is phishing with a PH.
Right. But to hear some of the stuff that's going on in these emails, if you are the rightful holder of the account, click the link below, fill the form, and then submit, and we will verify your identity and register you to CitiSafe free of charge. This way, you are fully protected from fraudulent activity on all the accounts that you have with us. Click to protect yourself from fraudulent activity, you know, it says with an exclamation point. To make Citibank.com the most secure site, every user will be registered to CitiSafe. Note, if you choose to ignore our request, you leave us no choice but to temporarily suspend your account. Please do not respond to this email, as your reply will not be received.
That part right there, that sounds fishy to me. If
right.
they hadn't included that, it would seem much more legitimate.
Now, a bank's not going to terminate your account and only do it through email, because email's not yet accepted as enough of a stable communication medium.
Right, not to mention the fact there's so many fraudulent emails out there,
right.
It would be impossible for a bank to say, we expect that to be true.
And, you know, how would a bank know that the person got the error message or the message about their account being disabled? So basically, don't accept anything coming through email that's about your bank.
Right. Now, so anyone who gets one of these, and also talk to family members about this. Just let them know before they see this email, before
yeah.
they see emails like this.
In general, email right now isn't considered secure either, and therefore a bank using any kind of email as a means of communicating with you just seems really fishy.
Would be liable for some damages, perhaps, if that information got
definitely.
Hijacked.
And the only bank that my bank that I'm familiar with in their internet uses all secure online transactions. The only kind of email I might get is go log into your account. And I don't think they'd even include the URL. I think you have to then go type it in because that's
right.
safer, if you will.
Yeah, right. That's a common way to get people hooked in, too, is to have a legitimate URL in the email. Well, it looks like a legitimate link, and then you click on it, it takes you to somewhere else. But
right.
most people don't notice that you get directed right. to a different place.
Right. So if you click on a bank link or any other place that you have financial information with, if you click on it and you look in your browser, if you see http://, and then a bunch of numbers, as opposed to citibank.com or
right.
like, you're being frauded.
Or even if it's like usa.something.something/something Citibank.
Right.
If Citibank is not in the first grouping.
Yeah, you know what? Just don't do it by email.
don't use email. No. Know what your bank URL is. Open up your last bank statement, find the URL in there, type that. That's a good, safe way to go. Thank you, Miles, for that. John?
BBC News had a little story about music fans will buy more than 10 million portable digital players this year. The Apple iPod has been one of the best-selling of those. Sony is introducing a new one to compete with the iPod, and Dell is introducing a new one to compete with the iPod. So Apple, possibly in response to all this, has dropped the price on their iPods, about $100 for the big ones. And they're also, they have new battery lifespan, 12 hours is what they're saying.
I finally saw that great little documentary/hate advertising that an early adopter of an iPod made. And it was basically about how the batteries fail a certain period of time. Have you seen that ad?
I have.
That kind of... it's a personal video, maybe.
I've got a car adapter for my battery, for my iPod now, because the battery is, it lasts for maybe half an hour now.
Yeah,
but then again, I have the first generation iPod, and you can crack the case open and put a new battery in, but it's not for the faint of heart.
Right. All right, well, thanks for the update on iPods. Any more iPod information?
I have so much iPod information.
You're kind of addicted to this.
I started looking around thinking, this is something big. Everyone's been waiting for Apple to release a PDA, and they haven't. So a lot of people have been converting the iPod into a PDA-like device. In fact, let me do one of my other news stories.
With a really small screen.
with an insanely small screen that's totally unusable as a PDA. Duke University will be distributing 1,800 20-gigabyte iPods. Actually, they've received 1,800 20-gigabyte iPods. They'll be distributing 1,650 of those to its incoming first-year students in a pilot program. It'll be a one-year trial. They're hoping that via a special website they've set up that mimics the iTunes store, students will be able to download lectures, course content, language lessons, audiobooks, and other academic assistance. So they can be walking around campus listening to a lecture, learning a foreign language, whatever. They're going to be doing this to see if it's better than what they've done before, which is passing out the content on either DVD or CD.
Mm-hmm.
Should
be cheaper.
Which would be a lot cheaper, yeah, especially since they are giving these iPods to the students.
Wow.
It's not just you get to keep it for the first year. It's theirs. Tracy Futhi, gosh, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, is vice president for IT at Duke, and she says she hopes the students will create their own uses for the device, such as a student newspaper that you download the daily news in audio format so that you can then listen to the student newspaper as you walk across campus.
It's like a on-demand radio kind of thing for the whole campus.
I think it'd be neat just to see what people come up with as uses
for it. Thank you very much. I'm glad you covered that story. I thought it was fascinating that Duke was doing that. Miles.
Yeah, this via Wired News. It's an article about the latest Senate bill sponsored by Senator Orrin Hatch, which would hold technology companies liable for supplying devices or software that can be used to illegally copy music, videos, software, etc.
So giving the tools to do something illegally would be a crime?
Giving the tools for something that could be used.
So like selling hammers because you could hurt someone with a hammer would be illegal?
Well, to give you an idea of how broad this particular bill would be, this would apply to a VCR.
Right, because you could theoretically record music to a VCR.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, the company that's producing the software and or hardware would have to try to enforce some kind of it's hard to copy stuff illegally with the system. They'd have to produce some kind of internal mechanisms that would do that?
I'm not so sure, because this is basically talking about the device would have to be made in such a way that circumvention would not be possible.
Right.
You can't do that.
Right, you can't do that.
Well, then again, when combined with the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, they may have some standing saying, oh, we tried putting something in there, someone circumvented, they're liable for this. But yeah, it has a whole, say, for example, you make some MP3 player and you make it easy to just copy files from your desktop. Well, you've just helped with sharing. The thing that makes it that much easier to use, that much more convenient, has made it potentially illegal.
Well, I hope this bill goes nowhere. Thanks for the update on that. John?
Similar news. SunCom International said that 80% of its customer service complaints recently have been related to the iPod and its inability to play some of their copyrighted music. What this has done is it's forced Suncom and its competitor Macrovision to revisit the way they protect their music CDs. Up to this point, they've been including 2 sessions per CD. 1 session is burned, and that's what you hear when you put it into your CD player and listen to it. The other session is a locked-down version of the CD, and everything's saved in Microsoft's Windows Media Audio format, which is WMA. WMA was chosen since it can be played on, you know, basically any machine that has Windows on it. But the iPod can't play that format, so therefore anyone with an iPod can't play it. So therefore, Macrovision and Suncom have been working with Apple on coming up with a new protection standard that will allow iPods to play it. And this is very interesting because it's kind of going against what Microsoft had tried to put in place. What they're really trying to do is come up with a new format that will be changeable, because they've realized we can't set a single format and say this is the one we're going to use because things change so fast.
Right, so we want a format with growth potential.
Exactly.
All right, thank you, John, for that. Miles, your last story for the day?
Well, Microsoft was awarded a patent for a system and method for encouraging viewers to watch television programs, such as offering viewers frequent flyer miles for identifying the name of a sponsor.
Did they get this patent?
Yes, they were awarded the patent on Tuesday.
Okay, wait, explain an example of this patent that we'd be very familiar with, that would be covered by this patent.
An actual example, I don't know. This was talking about such as offering viewers frequent flyer miles for identifying the name of a sponsor or the color of an announcer's shirt. Basically making reference to some television program. But they got a patent for this, so no one else can do something like that.
So Monkey Watch TV, Monkey Get Banana, Microsoft owns the rights to that.
Right. Now, we have our issues with the patent office. But just to remind folks out there, there are about 3,500 patent examiners, and they get 200,000 or about 200,000 patent applications every year.
They're overworked and underloved.
All right. That's like 7,000 patents per person per day.
Not quite that many.
I've got one more.
Please, John.
It's kind of a segue into today's topic, my last iPod news. There's a free piece of software called WiPod, and it's a wireless hotspot finder for your iPod. If you've got a second generation iPod or better, you can go up to their website, which is BayAreaFreeFi.com, and download this. And basically, it's a list of cities. I'm pulling up the list
right now. Basically, it's just like a database.
It's a database of cities and what hotspots are in there, and you can update it.
Not that you can use hotspots at all with your device.
No, but you know, you can use it with your laptop, and it works on, you know, obviously any iPod that works with Windows and Mac. And it's got cities like Boulder Creek, Cupertino.
That's a town. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's
all right. Well, cool. That is good lead.
Felton.
You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell of the Geeks this morning. That was John Tracy and Miles Elam. In the end of the last decade, the internet boon gave us horrible things like Netscape 4.7 and some semi-good things like standalone internet cafes. I'm happy to see the demise of Netscape 4.7 and pleased as peach to see the reemergence of the internet cafe in its healthy form. Like the latest internet browsers, the new internet cafe is a redefinition of the form. Traditional coffee houses, right, are ushering in an added service to their customers, a free internet access. But this service is an added perk, not the main ingredient to a healthy coffee shop. And speaking of healthy coffee shops, Ken Botello, owner and operator of Cafe Bene in Santa Cruz, is with us to talk about his shop and internet access. Ken, thanks, and welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello. Thanks.
Cafe Bene has been operating for 16 years in the same location, and just last month you doubled your floor size. Threw in a couple of computers, open your customers, and open up free wireless pipe to the internet for anybody that walks in or even stands out on the street. What motivated you to add the service to your customers?
Well, it became increasingly apparent that people wanted to be able to get away from their office for a moment and do some private surfing that their offices have been able to monitor quite closely. So I'm going to go get a cup of coffee. And, you know, for their 10 minutes, they're surfing, doing whatever.
They're submitting their job, their resume to other companies.
So do they have to bring their laptop along if they want to surf?
Well, yeah. If they want the free internet access, they have to have their computer.
Excellent.
But you do have a couple of computers in there in case someone doesn't have the machine and wants to check their email or do something.
Yes, I do.
And you're charging a little bit of money for these, but are they being used much by your customers?
Well, at present, it's a new thing. It's only been established now for a month, so mm-hmm. it's getting increasing usage, but there's still room, plenty of room.
You have burners in these machines, so people can go down, download like large files, like even installation applications that they might want to install at home, burn it to a CD. You're offering CDs for a relatively cheap amount of money, and then carry it home with them. And I think that would be a great service for people that don't have high-speed internet access, like John here, don't have a high-speed internet access and don't have a laptop. You can still go down someplace and actually get some files onto a CD that you can then access at home. Are you seeing anybody buying CDs from you and doing that kind of thing?
On occasion, yes. And I use the service myself because at home I'm on a dial-up.
Right.
I've got the high speed at the shop, so why?
Why wait at home and do stuff? Are you finding yourself in the middle of the night driving down to the shop just to be able to search? I can see doing that.
Not yet. Early in the morning, perhaps.
Yeah. 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 Well, you're a coffee guy. You got to be early in the morning, right? All right. So the other thing we want to talk about, I mean, I'm glad that the service is booming, and it's happening everywhere. Coffee shops traditional coffee shops are just starting to add service. Starbucks was kind of I wouldn't say the leader in that, but definitely in the public eye leader because it's a big business. They, of course, charge for their service. It's something like $20 a month to do any. But it's a very convenient service to know that anywhere you can find one of those coffee shops, and you can find them anywhere, you can have internet access. But I don't personally know anyone that does it that way. Because there's so many, especially in the town that you know of the local coffee shop, and so many of them are opening up these services. Did you see it as a competition thing that you had to do?
Not really. I think that, for the most that I've experienced, a lot of the shops around just offer it for free anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't a matter of my charging for it. The internet access through, DSL has, the price for access has come down significantly.
Right. It's so inexpensive for you that you should do it anyway. And besides, you can do it at the business. You can't do it at home. You're going to do it at the business, right?
Right, yeah.
What about your equipment? When you went ahead to do this research, to do this project and set it up, you run your own business, so you're technical to some degree. How do you go about figuring out what kind of equipment you needed?
Well, it was it started with having an internet access speed of 1.5 or less. So I didn't need to get anything very quick because
mm-hmm.
the bottleneck would be right there at the DSL source. So I went with a B wireless router to begin with. And then I increased
802.11b.
Yeah. And then I purchased a router that had both A and B for those with the old cards. And my computer, which has one of those old cards, I can just bypass the rest. And
okay. So you have A support as well.
Yes.
Now, A is pretty uncommon.
Right.
Yeah. But you bought your first wireless card, and so that's what you've got.
Well, actually, it was my second wireless card because there were so many on B, I figured I wanted a clean frequency.
So really, your A frequency in your shop is going to be less used and therefore pretty nice for you.
Right, for those of you who have A cards.
Now, the two machines that are actually in the shop, those are networked via Ethernet, or do they have wireless cards as well?
Well, actually both, but I have them hardwired in.
Okay.
It's just much more solid that way.
Right. All right, so I want to get into the nitty-gritty of coffee, too, because you're a coffee expert. First off, I want to know about something. What is the difference between like a French roast and Italian roast from a perspective of producing it? Is it different beans?
No, the roast is the roast. You can take any bean and roast it to whatever degree you wish.
And is a French roast just roasted longer than an Italian roast?
Italian roasts are normally roasted longer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Now, the darkness of the coffee, does the roast have to do a lot with the translucency of the coffee?
Translucency of what the brew, which you end up with in a cup. Well, yeah, it's gonna come out looking a little darker from a darker roasted bean.
Okay, and what's the flavor difference? I'm trying to get geeky on coffee. That's the attempt here.
Well,
what's the flavor difference of describe a French versus an Italian roast? Is that hard?
Well, describe the flavor of coffee. to my palate, the Italian roast is a slightly more bitter cup, but to me, the whole air, the whole flavor, the palate of the cup, it has to do with the bean itself, not just necessarily the roast, because you can get junk beans, roast them dark, and a lot of times they use that to flavor coffees, like your hazelnut this or
right.
Vanilla that. you don't have to get quite the higher quality of bean because your consumer is not really worried about the taste of the coffee. They're worried about what, you know, little nicety is going to be in it.
When you say the quality of the bean, junk beans or quality beans, what are you looking for in a good bean, like before you roast it?
It's shape and size. There are different grades of beans, like different grades of fruit that you'd buy in the supermarket. American grades are fancy, extra fancy, whereas they use letters to name the grades of other foreign beans. Whereas Kona, you'll find an extra fancy.
Now, Kona's Hawaii, right?
Right. Okay. And so that's our type of labeling system. Whereas Kenyan, you'll have A, double A, that type of thing.
So the bean is normally named from the region it comes from?
Yes, it's a variety.
What about the plant itself? Are there different types of coffee plants?
Yes, there's Arabica, which is the finer grade, and there's Robusto.
And what's the difference between those plants?
Well, mostly the bean size, where they're grown. I mean, as far as the botanical differences, I really couldn't elaborate on that.
It's interesting. I just realized that the other two geeks in the house are not coffee drinkers. Like, I was about 2 years ago not a coffee drinker at all. John, you've never really drank coffee, right?
Actually, I used to work for a place right across from De Anza, a coffee shop selling coffee. And
did you drink it at that time?
A ton, yeah,
okay.
Absolutely.
And Miles never liked the taste of coffee, right?
Yeah, not so much. And I'm thinking you were saying you only started drinking coffee 2 years ago. How old's your son again?
About 2 years.
Okay.
Compensation for lack of sleep, I think. Now, it's interesting because when I talked to our producer, Maggie Cleveland, about the show today, I was saying we're going to talk about internet cafes, we're going to talk about coffee, we're going to get geeky in those. And she's like, right, exactly, because coffee is a geek drink because geeks are programmers and geeks have to stay up late and do a lot of stuff, and so they're always drinking coffee, and that's kind of a tied in with the programming thing, which is very geeky. And then I realized that, well, 50% of the geeks don't even drink coffee, which is kind of... Actually, Sean doesn't drink coffee either. So... A little strange.
It's just you, Lyle.
It's just me. I drink a lot of coffee.
It's
I also play the show.
The Santa Cruz geek is a whole different breed.
It is, isn't it? Now, do you have a lot of geeks that come in to Bene?
Well, they're well hidden if they're actual geeks. They don't, you know, wear pocket protectors or anything like that.
Yeah, we travel in disguise now.
Yeah. We're cool and hip now.
But there are an increasing number of folks coming in with laptop computers and being very centered on those laptop computers.
Now, what kind of customer do you like better? Do you like the customer who comes in and gets something and then leaves, or do you like the person who comes in and takes their laptop and stays for a while?
Well, I don't believe there's any preference along those lines. As long as they're a customer and, you know, they like what I serve enough to come back, that's my favorite.
When you opened up, basically the business next to you went out of business. And tragically, actually, the owner had passed away in a car accident. And the business right next to you is kind of, it now seems like one building and one space because you've ripped the wall between them. Kind of that allowed you to double your space, and doing that allowed you to have room for computers and such. Are you seeing a larger amount of people staying and hanging out and doing this?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, before, the shop was just a...
closet.
Yeah, hole in the wall type situation where when 15 people were in that shop, it was loud and it was, you know, confining. And so a lot of folks would go, oh, there's a line, you know, there's too many people, and they'd go someplace else. Well, now that isn't the case.
Let's talk a little bit about brewing. And if you're depending what kind of bean you have, you can brew it through drip or through espresso type steam injection. I'm assuming there's other ways to brew coffee as well, boiling it with
cowboy coffee. Yeah,
cowboy coffee. Drink it slow.
Put it on the campfire.
Drink it slow or chew it. So you don't do any cowboy coffee, of course, at Bene, but you do drip and espresso. And what's the difference in those two things? I mean, it's both water adding to the grain and getting flavor. So what's the difference in the two? From a technical perspective, from a geeky perspective.
Espresso is made by forcing hot water through the grounds, whereas the drip method uses gravity to extract.
Okay. And what does it do for the material that comes out of the grain?
Well, I find espresso to be much sweeter in flavor than the drip coffee. But drip has its advantages where it contains a little more caffeine.
Oh, it does, because it gets to saturate a little bit more.
Right.
Now, does the caffeine come from the bean or come from something else?
Yeah, it comes from the bean. Water is usually caffeine-free.
Right, right. But it's not like any kind of process where caffeine gets added to it in the roasting or process.
Well, there are coffees available that are spiked with more caffeine.
I figured there would be.
But
I've had water spiked with caffeine.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, or coffee brewed with water from caffeine with caffeine in it. How is a decaf coffee made then?
Well, there's a process where they extract the caffeine from the bean, and there are
and that destroys the flavor, or no?
Well, to me, the caffeine is an integral part of the complexity of what brew you're making. I think decaf, personally, I think decaf is brown water. I don't like myself to drink it, but there are those who like that hint of coffee flavor but cannot take the caffeine. They have a bad reaction to it or just don't want to have the withdrawal later.
All right. Now, Miles, is that a reason why you don't drink coffee, because of the caffeine?
No, I have no particular problem with caffeine. I do have a problem with drinking coffee first thing in the morning, just because that means that every single morning I require this chemical in order to wake up. In terms of drinking caffeine, you know, I drink sodas. I even gone for a mud pie ice cream from Mary Ann's, coffee ice cream with some chocolate in it, so to keep myself awake for a long drive. But it's just that dependency that I have a problem with. I have a problem with needing something to get up in the morning as opposed to my body telling me, you know, you're really tired.
Yeah. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Luckily, I'm control of the board. Miles is here, but we're talking about coffee anyway. We're talking about coffee with owner and operator of Cafe Bene, Ken. And if you'd like to join the conversation about using your computer in an internet cafe or about coffee in general and a geeky matter, give us a ring. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. And just to show that I still love Miles, please, sir, read.
Congressman Sam Farr will hold a town hall meeting on Monday, August 2nd from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Santa Cruz City Council Chambers, 809 Center Street in Santa Cruz.
This program is supported by a grant from Cruz.io, providing internet services including DSL, spam filters, PHP, MySQL. Now with nationwide access, information about Cruz.io membership is available online at cruz.io.com or by calling 459-6301.
This week in This American Life, murderers performing a play about murder. At a prison in Missouri, inmates put on Hamlet. Danny Waller plays Hamlet's murdered father.
I'm the body up there, but the words are coming from William Pride, the man that I killed.
Murderers critique Shakespeare's fictional murder this week.
Hear This American Life Sunday morning at 10 on KUSP.
This is Central Coast Public Radio, KSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The Geeks this morning, Miles Elam and John Tracy. And we're talking with Ken Botello, operator, owner of Cafe Bene. Coffee and internet access is our subject. You can join us, 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Ken, what about coffee addiction? Got any feelings, thoughts about it?
Well, yeah, my personal... time. I'm a coffee addict. And
it's not a problem, right? You can control it any time you like.
Yeah. I go to sleep sometimes just thinking about the next cup.
I've got to say, when I stopped working at the coffee place I was working at, I stopped drinking coffee and, you know, just cold turkey. I was done. And for like 2 days, no problem. Everyone's like, oh, you're going to have such a bad headache. And 2 days, no problem. I'm like, yeah, there's no big deal. And then I guess all the caffeine was out of my system by then. And yeah, I was out for like 2 or 3 days.
No, you could have just weaned yourself slowly off of it and gotten yourself less and less coffee.
I'm not that smart. It's not my style.
Pain. I want pain. Yeah. Well, you're a runner, so that makes sense. All right, Ken, a little bit more about the grain of coffee. Now, you can grind coffee a whole bunch of different ways. What are you going to get out of it depending on how you grind it?
Well, the best way to grind coffee is using a mill, like a grain mill. They make special coffee grinders, which use mills, you know, to...
Plates
that grind against each other.
And why is that good?
It produces a much more homogeneous size of grain, of granule. Whereas the whirly blade type grinders, you'll get powder, you'll get thick ones.
And kind of all together.
Right. So, and if you grind the coffee too fine, add too hot a water, you're going to end up with a little bit bitter brew.
And why is that?
Well, because the caffeine extraction, caffeine itself is bitter.
Okay.
So the more extraction you get, the more bitterness you're going to have. And with the smaller grain, with the hot water, more surface area, boom, there it is. You're getting a lot more. And the larger grains won't release as much.
Okay, that makes sense. Basically, less, more surface area with finer grain.
But then you also get more caffeine with the finer grains.
Yes, yes.
Do you want a thinner grain when you're, depending on how you're brewing?
Depends on your palate. Yeah, if you like a smooth cup, which, you know, doesn't have any spikes of bitterness, you'll want to get it's a combination of the grind, the temperature of the water, the length of exposure.
Okay. And that's what you're thinking about when you're, depending on how your brewery types. We have someone, I hope you didn't prompt to call in. Carrie from Santa Cruz, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi, welcome. I just wanted to give two thumbs up to Cafe Benny and Ken, the best coffee house and internet cafe in town.
And Ken will pay you later for this comment?
No.
Are you a regular?
He is a coffee connoisseur, and I appreciate it over the last 13 years, and I encourage everybody to go out to Cafe Benny and try it. That's it. Over and out.
Now, Carrie, one question before you hang out.
Yeah.
Have you used internet access at all there?
I have.
You have. And is it a useful thing to you? I mean, you've been going there
for
13 years.
It's extremely useful. It's extremely, since I'm a computer graphics professional, I really enjoy being able to go there early and do some of the things I need on my own laptop. And if I don't bring my own laptop, he's got two beautiful computers there that work super fast, DSL, and it's been very convenient. It's a beautiful environment, very friendly.
And do you consider yourself addicted to coffee?
No, but I do enjoy it.
Now, Carrie, one last question. Ken's got at Cafe Benny has two Windows machines running XP, I think, Windows XP. What do you use for graphic development? Graphic art?
I use a Mac.
You use a Mac. So is it okay for you to be switching? Have you tried doing that much, or do you try to use your laptop most of the time?
I use a laptop most of the time, although if I need to do internet surfing, I'm very comfortable on an XP.
Right, because you got a browser there, and then you don't have to bring the machine out from the car.
Exactly.
Well, Carrie, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you for the show.
I'll see you at the
show. I love GeekSpeak.
Thank you very much. And we have Greg from Paso Robles, probably too far to come out to Cafe Benny. Greg, what's your question today?
I don't have a question. I got a comment. The thing you were talking about, the bill that Orrin Hatch introduced. Orrin Hatch is a very conservative guy, right?
I would classify that, Miles.
Okay. Yeah. Orrin Hatch is a big defender of the Second Amendment. Is that true?
I believe that is true, yes.
Okay. Now, is this bill, can this be construed to say that Winchester is going to have to devise a gun that you can't walk into a liquor store and hold it up with?
Except the Winchester is not an electronic device.
Well, I mean, but couldn't you take this, his philosophy, a step farther and do that?
Definitely.
That's a comment. That's all I got to say.
Well, thank you.
Yeah,
you got ticked off from the bill. Yeah, we did too. Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much, Greg, for the call from Paso Robles. I was assuming that a drill, a hand drill, you know, an electronic drill would be electronic equipment that you could theoretically hurt someone with or do something
illegal.
Well,
it doesn't have transistors, so it would be an electric equipment as opposed to electronic equipment.
I don't know about that. I think some drills probably do have transistors in them. They got to, like, break for overheat and stuff. There's going to be sensors in them. I don't know about that. I wonder if the bill specifically... And maybe
it was talking about for video music.
Okay, so you'd have to do something illegal with regards to copying stuff.
Has to do with, like, Hollywood media.
A Xerox machine would be classified as this because you could Xerox the cover of a CD or something of that nature. Yeah, John?
This really ticks me off because, my son had a really good question the other day. We were watching a videotape, and he said, how come we can't copy? We have a TiVo also. Mm-hmm. How come? He wanted to watch this one part, but we had to fast forward to get there, and it takes forever. So he said, how come we can't copy this to the TiVo?
And you own the tape.
Yeah, we own the tape. So that's a really good question. How come you can't just copy things?
Well,
not because I want to make... I know, you can. but it's not simple.
Right.
And it's not because we want to be pirates and selling this thing to everybody. We just,
you want to use the best technology for
this. Yeah, this technology is so convenient to do what we're trying to do. Why can't we use it? And it just seems like you're limiting the available technology, its use.
Because you need to protect business. That's the idea of the government. And you're listening to Democracy Now. No, sorry. This is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The Geeks this morning, Miles Elam and John Trace. We're talking about kind of politics, but what we're really trying to talk about, coffee and internet access. We have Ken Botello, owner-operator of Cafe Benny. Miles.
So I have a question as a non-coffee drinker who knows very little about coffee. I'm a coffee newbie, I guess, the best way to describe it.
You'd be a newbie if you were drinking coffee. So go on. What's the question?
Well, I go in there to drink hot chocolate.
Yes, so. Yes, I've noticed.
Now, I did hear about people saying, oh, I want a shot of espresso or a couple shots of espresso. But you were talking about the drip being more caffeine. So how does that come to play where someone says, I want a coffee with a double shot of espresso?
Well, a double shot of espresso is a little different because you've had this first chance for the water to go through. And then when the second time goes through, it just pulls out the caffeine.
So a double shot means using the same grains and just going water through twice?
Well, you use twice the amount of coffee.
Okay.
But you let it go once and it extracts a nice little cup. And when you give it the second shot, the caffeine really bleeds out of it.
Okay. So it's based on that exposure thing you were talking about.
Right.
And, of course, the second shot, everything's already wet. And so it's already kind of saturated, and you've got that caffeine's been being soaked out for a millisecond or whatever it is before.
You say the second shot, you're not sending the same water through again. You're doing a second. Okay.
But the person drinks all of that, so.
Yeah. I guess they're coming from a total neophyte.
Now, is a triple shot going through the water again?
No. The way I make a triple shot is it's a double with a single.
Oh, you mean you do a double and you do a single and you add it all together?
Right.
Okay. Is there a diminishing return if you run the water through a third time? It just doesn't do much?
It's just bitter. Oh, yuck.
It gets bitter as you saturate more caffeine from it. Mm-hmm. So is the caffeine the only thing that causes the coffee to be bitter?
Well, I don't know the exact chemical nature of what's going on, but it just seems that the longer you let the water set in there, it's just more bitterness.
The phone numbers are 476-2800, and that's in the 831 area code. Again, 831-476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. And since we typically talk about technology geek stuff, please give us a ring with any questions or comments about your computer dilemmas, problems, concerns. Again, the phone number is 476. So I'm opening up to any call. 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877.
So taking the geek bent and having a lot of friends who've gone through organic chemistry and having to synthesize caffeine, I'm wondering, have you ever decided to take it to that next level? In other words, just get like the eyedropper of almost pure caffeine, just kind of like, just do a little drop in there and has this very, have a very tangy taste to it, kind of like a candy.
Well, they have caffeinated candies. So,
do you sell those?
Yes, I have a couple. Okay. There's a chocolatey mint one and just a straight chocolate.
The thing is...
But I mean, like, the Miles, equivalent of a double shot of espresso in an eyedropper.
The thing is, Miles, it's not simply about the caffeine. It's about the whole flavor and experience of the coffee.
Right, because if it didn't have caffeine, everyone would still drink it.
Well, a lot of people drink decaf coffee. But yes, it's not... I would say that they're tied together. But they're not the same. It's not... You wouldn't
so
just want
like
caffeine.
Cigarettes and the oral fixation. It's not just
exactly.
Nicotine.
It's an entire experience. They get to go outside and mingle and talk while they smoke. I mean, that's part of the smoking thing. So coffee thing is partly having that cup, and as it gets cooler and the changes of the flavor, and there's a lot to it. You going to add anything to that, Ken?
Well, I remember the times when I first started my cafe, and I was working 6 days a week doing the opening shift. On the seventh day, I rested, but I would want to sleep in. So I'd wake up 2 hours later than I normally would with this raging headache.
Right.
So I ended up having to start having my caffeine or my coffee an hour after I would start work. So that way, that would be 2 hours after I'd normally wake up. And, so
and then it would be okay.
Yeah, and then I could get up real quick on that last day and make myself a quick cup.
For those of you not in the studio, he's slapping his arm looking for a vein.
David from Santa Cruz, welcome to Geek Speak.
Well, gentlemen, are you ready for some interesting coffee factoids?
Oh,
absolutely.
Well, first of all, coffee, the fruit of the coffee tree is the tree itself is a semi-tropical evergreen, which is a really damn weird thing. You think about it, the semi-tropical evergreen. Secondly, there's an International Bureau of Flavors and Fragrances that states that what goes into the making of the taste of coffee is 500 different oils and compounds and what have you. It's considered to be one of the most complex flavors known to humankind. And it's truly absolutely amazing. I just thought I'd throw that in there because... coffee's a lot more than just the caffeine. It's absolutely amazingly complex thing that goes in there. And I think there's something else that must be zapping you besides all the caffeine. So sort of similar to everyone talks about the THC and marijuana, but there's a lot more to it than just that. Take care, guys.
Thank you very much, Dan, from the call.
Bye-bye.
Up at the Cabrillo Horticultural.
Yes.
Okay. Up at the Cabrillo Horticultural Center. Well, actually, this is before the center. They have a class where they one of the experiments we do is you try to grow things in coffee grounds. And mm-hmm. You find that nothing will grow. You know, you can take the toughest plant and it will die in coffee grounds. And then everybody brews the coffee, drinks the coffee, and then you try growing things in the coffee ground.
And it grows one.
And you can grow just about anything you want in coffee grounds. I just want to throw that out there.
So basically, the stuff that makes things not grow goes into the body.
Right.
All right. Good to know.
Sweet.
Frank from Watsonville, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi. I tuned in a little bit late. You may have already covered part of this, and if so, forgive me. But my household drinks solely decaf coffee, and not a lot of coffee. I'd say we're casual coffee drinkers, maybe a couple pots a week at the most. I'd be real interested in hearing what advice you have on kind of the whole coffee at home process, from picking beans, what's the best way to
do you
brew
pick
the
your
coffee?
Own beans at home?
No, I can't. I don't live in Columbia, unfortunately.
Okay. All right.
actually, fortunately, but from bean selection to grinding the beans to storing the beans to brewing and then keeping the coffee so that if you don't drink it when it's fresh out of the pot, but you want a cup 2 hours later.
Well, that's
what's the whole process. I'll take the answer off the line, off the radio if you don't mind.
Thank you, Frank. That's wonderful. Ken, tell us a little bit about recommendations for brewing coffee at home.
Brewing coffee at home. At home, I brew it the drip method. It's just much more convenient. I haven't found a home espresso machine that I really like, so mm-hmm. I gave that up 10 years ago and just brew it drip style.
Okay, so for a drip style, how do you want to grind your beans? Do you want to grind your own beans or just buy pre-ground beans?
Well, coffee is very much like bread, where once it's roasted, you have about 2 weeks before it becomes MJB.
MJB?
Canned coffee.
Okay. Oh, I see, yes.
So, so if you're going to go buy bread, you want to buy a fresh loaf, and you're going to consume it in a couple of days, and then you'll go buy another one. It's best to do it like that with coffee.
And does that mean also non-ground, or does it not really matter?
Well, for the purist, grinding your beans right there is the best way to do it. You're going to get the most flavor because you can get the aroma. Everything is right there. The whole experience is...
Right. As you grind it, the aroma that comes out, that experience of grinding it.
Do they make small mill grinders for home?
Yeah, they do.
Okay. Are these hand crank things or electric things? Or?
Electrical.
Uh-huh. So you want to get you would recommend a small electrical mill grinder.
Yes.
And buy your beans in small enough doses that you go through it in a week.
Right.
So you don't want like a 6 month supply of coffee. That would be like having lots of dried bread.
Right. Yeah, okay. Lots of crackers.
Yeah, lots of crackers. Lots of what are those things for salad?
Croutons.
Thank you. So back to our subject at hand. Can people buy small amounts of coffee? I mean, that small amount if for casual drinking?
Oh, yeah. I mean, at my shop, we weigh down to a quarter pound.
What's the volume of that?
Oh, you can probably
can get... A can? I mean, like a...
It's about 8 ounces.
Yeah, see, that doesn't work on air.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's about a coffee cup full.
It's about a coffee cup full.
Right.
So you can buy it. And how many cups does that produce?
Depending upon the brewing and the grinding, you can get anywhere from... 2 to 10.
Okay. So, and what about the drip method? Do you recommend like a Mr. Coffee kind of thing, or do you recommend boil your own coffee in a teapot and pour it through a filter thing?
I boil my own water and let it stand because you really don't want to expose the beans to any more than 190 degrees.
So not boiling?
Not boiling water. Not like tea. Tea, you want to, most teas, you want to give it the hot.
Okay, so how do you cool the temperature of the... I mean, how do you know what temperature the boiled water is?
Well, I personally bring it to a boil, let it stand for a minute and a half, and then wet the grounds.
And is that on a gas stove or electric stove?
It is on a gas stove.
So it really does cool down. Okay, that's good to know. So a minute and a half after you've boiled it, then you do it. So I would assume that your process is you start the water up and,
Yeah.
That's all there is to it.
When it whistles, I just take the kettle off.
Now, do you use one of those gold filter things, or do you use, like, a paper filter?
I use a paper filter.
No, what's the difference?
Paper will filter better as far as keeping grounds out of the coffee. The gold filters have a little bit more porous openings.
Now, does that matter for a milling kind of grind? Because the grind,
especially in milling, because with a gold filter, there's a lot of the mill powder dust that will get through the gold filter.
So it does. So you do still produce powder with a milling. type, but not as much as one of those whiskey, like, blender types.
Right.
All right. All right. Well, back to our callers, because we've neglected them for too long. Blaze from Santa Cruz. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Hey, I'm sorry. I'm a little off topic, but I had a computer question.
Well, we can do that.
Weird. Okay. Geek Speak.
I have I'm running Panther on Mac, and I've noticed that my mail filters, my junk mail filters, work for a while, and then they quit working. And then I read some stuff about it on the net, and there's a couple files. I'm kind of doing this from memory, so I don't know the names of them, but you can find them in your, I guess it's the application support folder under mail in your mm-hmm. library. And it says, oh, just, you know, delete this one, and, you know, it sort of self-creates.
And then you get to retrain your junk mails.
Yeah, well, then what I did was I thought, well, wait a minute. I had junk mail sort of working in, what was the version before? Jaguar. And so I had kept all that stuff, so I just transferred that same file over to the Panther system, and then it worked for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's quit working. So in other words, like, it'll filter out a message, you know, like you get repetitive ones, right? It'll say when it's working, it'll filter out these messages, and then after a while, it sort of creeps back into your inbox. In other words, it's already been trained, and now it detrained itself somehow.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a bug in the application. I've noticed some weird things with mail on junk mail
as well. The same thing.
Kind of, it stops working, or then it colors the message, but doesn't put the little junk symbol on it, things like that.
Well, I have it. Once it's working, I put it into the junk mail folder immediately, so I never actually see it. But then I'm just seeing them as unfiltered mail in my inbox. You know.
Okay. Here's a trick for this. Is what I recommend doing. Take your junk mail. Take a whole bunch of it. You know. A week's worth, and save it.
Okay.
And then, well, like every week, basically take your week's worth of email before you delete it, keep it there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then go and say clear junk mail and retrain. Then go back into that junk mail filter, label them all as junk. Make sure you've labeled all your normal messages not junk, and boom, it's all retrained again.
Oh, okay.
Do you follow?
Yeah, every week you have to do that.
Well, you don't have to, but if you're seeing that happening a lot, that would be one way to do it. That'd be a quick solution. The other thing is, I'm sure this bug will be repaired at some point.
Yeah, it seems like, is it specific to the Mac's way of filtering, which is some, I forget the name of it. But
Benzene filter, yeah. It's a,
right,
it's an algorithm.
Is it specific to that, do you think?
I'm sure it is, has to do with that code, but they're not going to, that's not surfaced right now. You could also try Firefox, but, Thunderbird.
Uh-huh.
Which is non-Mac, but Mac's one is great, so I'd recommend staying with it and go through it. And I would guess if you get it losing about, you know, every 6 months or something, every 4 months do this method I'm suggesting.
Mm-hmm.
You're retraining. You're basically saying, you know, because there's going to be messages a year ago, spam messages. Your junk filter, if it's still running, still remembers those settings, right? But no one's sending that junk mail anymore because it doesn't work. So you're keeping all this data about your filters, all this complexity in there, even though it's not really being used. So actually retraining it every, you know, 4 months or something is probably a good thing to do anyway.
Oh, okay.
Because the more complicated your logic is in finding junk mail, that means the more processing power it takes to decipher if a message is a junk or not.
Mm-hmm.
That's my recommendation, Blaise.
Okay. Hey, thanks a bunch, you guys.
You bet. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
And, of course, from Scotts Valley, Charles, welcome to Geek Speak. You know what? I've said hello to the wrong person. Gary from Boulder Creek? Yellow?
Well, in case you...
That's you.
You got me?
Yeah, who's that?
I'm Hal from Santa Cruz.
All right, Hal from Santa Cruz. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Yeah, I missed the last 20 minutes, but I heard the first half hour, and I had a comment about coffee, computers, and addiction.
Please.
I used to be addicted to coffee, and I was as conscious of it as some others are, and I would just simply get off it once a year for a couple weeks just to make sure that I was capable of doing that. I stopped doing the break, but in recent years, often I won't drink coffee for several weeks and then drink two or three cups a day. It's a lot like computers. First time I went out of town without my laptop, I thought I was going to die. But you know what?
I survived.
I made it back. And none of that email disappeared while I was gone.
Right, right.
So,
especially not the spam.
Yeah. So there's a real connection, addiction-wise.
Thanks for the comment.
You're welcome.
All right, now Charles from Scotts Valley. Well, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi. I wanted to know what the best way to brew quality coffee while backpacking or camping is. I personally use a aluminum percolator. Find it to be light and it's good flavor, but I'm wondering what you guys do or would recommend.
Ken?
Well, I'm not really a backpacker by nature, but when I used to go to the hotels, I would bring my own hot plate and, you know, small vessel to boil the water and just brew the thing the same way I would at home with a cone filter and some paper.
My goodness, go on. Uh-huh.
And some paper inserts and just go with it that way. Of course, I would guess on the trail, it'd probably be best to have some type of maybe a gold filter or something. You're not
reusing and throwing, trying to find a place to get rid of it, right?
Right. Yeah.
Right. I don't have room for a solar panel in the hot plate, though.
Well, the hot plate. I mean, do you take propane with you?
Yeah, we'll take whatever kind of a camp stove.
Right. So,
but you are going to need the solar panel for the mill grinder.
Yeah. Right.
Now, what about? Well, you can do a hand mill grinder too, but
I
or
grind
you just
it before
re-grind.
I leave.
Right,
just chew the beans and swallow some water.
Give now, me Ken, something to do.
Ken, he did mention a coffee type, a brewing type that we didn't talk about yet, and that's percolation, where the water's boiling the bottom, and the expansion of the water and the air causes the water to shoot up a tube and then drop on top of the coffee, and the bottom water then gets remixed with the coffee that's dripping through. Do you recommend it? You like it? What do you think?
I don't like it personally. It's you. The first time the water goes through, it's pure water, then it gets turned to coffee, and then you're boiling coffee.
And that's bad?
Yeah, boiling coffee's not good.
Is that why all those big vessels at, like, large events where there's, like, 30 or 50 cups of coffee in those big silver things, is that why they taste the way they taste?
That is, yes.
That's the reason. Because they're reboiling, you're boiling the water over and over again, or boiling the coffee.
Well, back in the 50s, percolation was the way to make coffee. Pretty much everywhere you went, you can buy percolators for your kitchen.
Right, right. But you don't recommend it?
I don't recommend it.
All right, there you go, Charles.
All right, thank you.
I hope that helps. And let's see. Yeah, let's go ahead and go to Fred in Watsonville. Fred, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. I just wanted to follow up. Last week you were talking about the reason for the delay in the IMAX.
Yes,
the G5 processors.
Yes.
And I read a rumor on a user group discussion list that actually what they're doing with the new iMac is it's going to have an entirely new form factor where the processor is actually tucked into the back of the flat panel display. So it looks like it's just a display.
I've heard that one too. Yeah, and it's going to be like the 20th anniversary Mac.
Right.
Yeah, I've heard that too, and they're having heat dissipation problems.
Exactly. So... I have no idea if that's...
Yeah, again, it's a rumor, but I've heard that one several times as well.
It's a great idea to have just the flat panel. Let's see if it happens. Well, and thanks, Fred, for the comment.
And it's totally
all right.
It's totally an Apple thing to do, too.
Yeah, make it smaller and faster. Yeah, thanks, Fred, for the call.
Okay.
Well, we're almost out of time, and Ken, I wanted to offer you an opportunity to mention anything that we hadn't, you know, you think we should have covered and we haven't. Got any thoughts on coffee or internet setup? John's got a question.
I've got one while he's thinking that over. I'm not a coffee drinker, and about, I don't know, twice a month I go to a coffee shop just because they have internet access, just because, you know, I use dial-up at
home.
Only
twice a month?
That's about how often I need to do large things on the internet.
Now, you run an internet business selling stuff
at
feltongames.com.
Right, but you have to upload images. You have to, you know.
And of course, you don't host that stuff at your house, but you host it some other place. Right. But you have to get all that data, pictures taken, and then put it up there and manage your stuff.
Right.
And you do that every other month, or twice a week.
About twice a month. You know, there's some months where I do it a lot more if we're getting a lot of stuff in. But what I'm saying is without the service that a coffee house provides, you know, with the free internet access,
you wouldn't be able to run your business.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to run my business.
You'd come down to KOSP and use the
I would have to find another place to access. So even though I'm not a coffee drinker, I go in and I have a hot chocolate or a chai or a tea or something. Yeah, or Italian soda.
So I'm assuming that's kind of, you're going to see some customers like that weren't typically using coffee. I mean, don't normally drink coffee, don't normally go in there, but are using it just for internet access, and they happen to pick stuff up when they're there.
Yeah. It was little munchies, some kind of thing to, you know, sticky up their fingers so that they can dirty the keys. So, and I must caution all listeners, do not put coffee on your computer to make it go faster.
It doesn't work, yeah. Graywolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Graywolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. Our guest today, Ken Botello, is owner and operator of Cafe Bene. Cafe Bene is located at 1101 Cedar Street in downtown Santa Cruz, across from Atlantis Fantasy World for those comic book fans. And Ken, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And I'll see you, of course, probably tomorrow, or at least Monday. And the geeks this morning, Miles Elam and John Tracy. Thanks, guys.
You're welcome. Always a pleasure.
Our producer is Maggie Cleveland. Answering the phones was Maggie as well. And thank you all for your participation in GeekSpeak. And to those of you that called in, thank you very much for making GeekSpeak what it is. Without you, it'd just be us geeking out about coffee today. Next week, about comic books. Sean Cleveland is right now at the largest comic book convention on the floor, learning details and information. He'll have some of that next week. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz. KBDH Sound Auto on the web at kusp.org. Fine Print with Rick Kleffel is coming up next. Rick is talking about One Ring Zero, about their new CD, As Smart As We Are. Stay tuned for that. And following that will be State of the Arts with my mother, Diana Wright Troxel. It's a discussion with Kate Putruchero. From Shakespeare Santa Cruz. Oh, Kate, yes. Taming of the Shrew and The Tamer Tamed. Stay with that. That will be following Fine Print. And then, of course, at noon, following that, will be Two Steps in the Blue with Charlie Lang. For KUSP and for GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxel. Stay tuned now for Fine Print.